He's amused Cam Newton.
Just ask that question one more time.
He's been insulted by Charles Barkley.
When some idiot in the press asked him, if you know what you know now, what you have scheduled this game?
He's interviewed Matthew McConaughey.
I do say go Tar Heels.
And he's taken on Big Blue Nation.
He's just completely taken the wind out of my sails.
It's time for The Drive with Josh Grant.
Welcome to a Thursday Drive, WSJS, News Talk Sports for the Triad, where in about a dozen minutes, we've got our bets for Super Bowl 57 to cap the best season we've ever had in Graham's Gambling. Make sure you're around for that. But before we get into those picks and the Kevin Durant trade, certainly that's a big story today, 1 hour until the trade deadline officially hits. Try to find somebody in the triad who's having a better week than Ty Appleby is at Wake Forest. A couple of days ago, he dropped 35 on North Carolina's head in a Wake Forest win. That's important to note. And today, he's got a national NIL deal with Applebee's corporate. And this is a story that should be celebrated all across the country, because Ty Appleby is the perfect example of the new name, image, and likeness rules working the way that they're supposed to. This is not pay for play. Even though I'm sure Jim Boeheim, when he saw the commercial in the last few hours, pointed to his screen and started calling his friend saying, "See?" This is the use of his name working to his advantage. This was earned by his play, and he's having one of the best seasons we've seen a Wake Forest point guard have, and I say that acknowledging Chris Paul went there and last year's point guard won ACC Player of the Year. That's not overstatement. We'll get to that in a bit. Here's some of the commercial that Applebee's made for the campaign.
This is college basketball star Tyree Appleby.
I love this place, but they spelled it wrong. It should be Y, not E-E. But lucky for them, I have their backs. Help me out. Go to whynotapplebee.com. That's Applebee with the Y.
He's got a website too. This is great. And it incentivizes stars to do big things in college and make a little money when they do so. You've got power with your brand and your name when you play in big-time college basketball. This is how guys like Armando Bacot stick around in school. This is why they do so now. So for all the negatives that you could point out, how people exploit things, such as what Miami did last offseason, which Jim Boeheim was talking about. He was just wrong to include Pittsburgh and Wake Forest in that. There are a lot of people trying to exploit the system, and that should be regulated. There's plenty of good, too, and this is an example of the rules working to create something good. Even the transfer rules. Turns out it's not the biggest deal that guys can freely move from school to school. In Ty's case, he went from Cleveland State, a mid-major, to play in SEC basketball at Florida. And once his coach left, he transferred to Wake Forest to better his situation. And that's exactly what's happened for him. He shouldn't be punished for wanting to step into a better situation the same way his coaches are able to. He's an example of the rules working the way that they're supposed to. He spoke it into existence on our show, the Applebee's piece of this specifically. This is from our conversation with Ty at ACC Media Day way back in October when BDOT asked an important question to Ty.
Now, has anybody reached out to Applebee's for an NIL deal?
No.
That needs to be on the to-do list.
I tried that, though.
Okay.
I tried already.
How do you try it?
They ain't ever get back to me.
So. No, I mean, like, how? Do you, like, reach out to Applebee's corporate?
Yeah, you email corporate.
Is that what you did?
I tried to. You know, the last name. So,
exactly.
I tried.
What's up, man? Hey, give my boy Ty.
So, what I'm saying is
I do. I'll get a little 2 for 20.
Look, Ty's 2 for 20 is the Applebee's.
I think it's 2 for 22 now. Well,
size 2 for 22.
Hey, my old number was 22.
Boom. Oh, nice to
so,
me.
Hey, there's look,
the pitch.
See?
It's there.
There's the pitch.
It's there, gang.
They need to get at me. They need to get at me.
Appreciate the time from Wake Forest guard and Applebee's future pitch man, Ty Appleby. Thanks
thank
for
you.
The time.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was prescient. We nailed that, I think. He spoke it into existence, and here he is. They got back at him. All he needed to do was drop 35 in a game, break an ACC record for free throws made in the game, and right now lead the ACC in points and in scoring.
I got 5, though.
Well, you got 1. We need 4 more endorsements.
We do. And we've got some in mind.
What were the ones we thought of?
Well, what's that oil change place?
Take 5?
Take 5 oil change.
I got 5, though.
You got the $5 footlong over at Subway.
Mm-hmm. I got 5, though.
Granny Smith? Applebee's?
I got 5, though.
Just a thought. He is, right now, one of the 3 locks to be all ACC. The 3 best players in the ACC right now are Armando Bacot.
Armando.
Ty Appleby. And Terquavion Smith at NC State. This looks like it's going to be the second consecutive year that the 3 best players in the league are right here in the state of North Carolina. Last year, Alondis Williams from Wake won Player of the Year. Bacot was the runner-up. And third receiving votes was Paolo Banchero, who went on to be the number 1 pick in the draft. So Ty Appleby, good on him. A story that's pretty easy to root for. On Twitter, at WSJS Radio. That's where we're streaming video in addition to YouTube and on Twitch. Guest today, Mike DeCourcy, Hall of Fame sports writer, going to be here in a half hour. David Glenn will be here later in the show, too. He's a huge Eagles fan and obviously has all the ACC media bona fides. But right now, take a moment and imagine what a sports fan in Phoenix is going through today. If they like the Cardinals, well, Arizona's still in the process of figuring out who their next head coach is going to be. And speaking of the NFL, an event called the Super Bowl is in their city. Graham's Gambling, 5 minutes from now. By the way, the final time we're going to play Graham's Gambling this year.
Send me that cash out, family.
And late last night, Phoenix learned that Kevin Durant is coming too. And as soon as I saw this headline, I was still up at around 1 o'clock in the morning. I bet WD was too, knowing you. Drinking coffee at 11:30 at midnight.
You know, I was.
How about that? First thought I had was, boy, do I feel good for KD. And boy, do I feel good for Chris Paul. You should feel good for those two because KD was not the problem in Brooklyn. 2 years ago, if his foot was a couple of inches further back than it was on a shot at the end of regulation against Milwaukee in a game 7, well, Brooklyn wins that game. Milwaukee went on to win the finals. You might be talking about KD carrying Brooklyn on his back to a championship because Kyrie was hurt, not playing in the series at that point. Harden was a shell of himself dealing with some stuff too. He was not the dramatic one. The drama came from Kyrie. It came from Harden. Does that mean that KD was perfect all the time? No, but he loves basketball. He wants to be out there as often as he can, and he was the best of those 3 players, and he's going to be remembered as such. Chris Paul's a guy who's going to be remembered for being a guy who's never won the finals unless he's able to get one here. Both Chris Paul and Suns fans deserve a title. Phoenix, low-key, great sports city, great sports fan base. And I think they like the Suns more than anybody else because that was their first big show in town. A lot of great players have played for that organization. Charles Barkley took them to the finals when they lost to Michael. They went a few years ago. Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire. The Mike D'Antoni experiment. They've had a lot of great teams. They just never won at all. And Chris Paul can relate to that. He's among the greatest players ever who have never won a championship. All the folks around here in Winston, his hometown, they still root for the guy and follow him closely, as we all do. And after last night, Phoenix is now the favorites to win the West. Don't overthink it. It's KD, it's Booker, it's Chris Paul. It's so uncommon to see a star of KD's caliber traded at the trade deadline
going to a contender and immediately becoming the best player on that contending team. It's so uncommon. It would be like watching a movie where 45 minutes into the movie, the best character appears and steals the movie, like halfway through the film. In a movie like, I don't know, Ghost, like Whoopi Goldberg did. Maybe that's just top of mind because I watched that again last night. WD watched it for the first time. How did the double feature go with Roadhouse and Ghost? When did you watch them, and what order did you watch them?
So I watched Ghost first, because that's what you told me to do, for whatever the reason. I actually decided to listen to you for a change. I put that on probably around 8 o'clock last night, and then took a little break in between, and about 10:30, 11 o'clock, put on Roadhouse.
Got the double feature in.
Did.
At the movies later on in the show. So as you could tell, there's a lot for us to do today. For the final time of what's been our best football season we've ever had in Graham's Gambling.
Send me that cash out, family.
72-54-2. 18 over 500. We've got four picks for Super Bowl 57 and Graham's Gambling next.
Check this out.
We're on at 5.
The perfect blend of sports and pop culture happens this evening at 6 with the Rich Eisen Show.
Okay, let's get this show rolling. Hit
it. Now back to The Drive with Josh Graham.
You might think Applebee's winning in sports today for the Thai Applebee partnership. But there is somebody else in contention. Bojangles tweeted this out. Boj Bomb. And it's a picture of a tweet from Adrian Bojnarowski saying, in a blockbuster move, Bowberry has restructured into a heart-shaped Bowberry for the remainder of his contract.
I dig it.
Big news.
Yeah.
We'll get to the NBA trade deadline in just a few minutes. Right now, I don't want to see this season go. 72-54-2 on the season.
Send me that cash out, fam.
It's the best season that we've had in picks. We are just crushing it this year. So we've got four bets for Super Bowl 57 that we hand to you right now.
If you're not gambling,
come on now, let's talk some money.
You're not trying.
You are so money.
You don't even know it.
But you do.
Let's play some bets.
I'm going to make you rich.
This is Graham's Gambling.
Okay, let's start with the game itself. Eagles, Chiefs. The line has stayed at 1.5 for the last week and a half, which tells me Vegas has a pretty good feel that this is going to be a great game. We're leaning Eagles here, and we're going to lay the 1.5.
Send me that cash out, family.
That's the lean. Best O-line, best D-line. We're going to go with Philadelphia. That's my first pick, which might be related to this prop bet that we really like a lot. This is my favorite prop. Jalen Hurts over 10.5 rush attempts in the game. He had 11 against the Niners, at least 9 in the last 4. This strikes me as a game you're going to put everything out there that you can. If he's having any issues at all with that shoulder still, expect more running the ball. If the Eagles are going to win the game, they're going to be trying to kill clock, try to run out the clock. There's more rushing attempts. And WD, I had to double check this. A kneel down counts as a rush attempt. So if we're getting pretty close and he's right there at 9, let's say, and the Eagles get the ball with a 130 to go, those last two kneel downs can put you over the top. I don't think we're going to need that, but those do count. Jalen Hurts over 10.5 rushes.
Send me that cash out, fam.
Dallas Goedert. A lot of focus on the tight ends, and these numbers have been inflated. Like the Travis Kelce over-under you look at. Dallas Goedert's over-under for receptions is 5.5. That seems a little ridiculous. Some places I see it at 4.5. I got it here on DraftKings at 5.5. He's only exceeded 5 catches once since mid-November. That's it. Like, he's had targets, but he's only exceeded 5 catches once since mid-November. And if the Eagles are going to win,
They're going to run the ball. It's going to be a run-heavy game, which means less passing, less targets for Dallas Goedert, under 5.5 for his receptions.
Send me that cash out, fam.
And lastly, Rihanna's halftime show, going to go over 8.5 songs. What constitutes a song? Glad you asked. Lyrics. If any lyrics are included for one song, that counts as a song. We see this with hip-hop acts. They try to splice stuff together. You might just get the beginning interlude of something and then it switches to another song. Well, that counts as two songs. 8.5. She's got 8 hits that were top 5 hits on the Billboard charts that she needs to get to. When you talk about hip-hop acts and R&B acts, it's going to be in the double digits. So 8.5, that's an easy over. Love the Jalen Hurts over. Love the Rihanna over. And we're in on Dallas Goedert under in receptions and the Eagles minus 1.5.
Send me that cash out, fam.
Trying to go 20 over 500.
For the record.
For the season.
There is no we on that Eagles minus 1.5. I'm going Chiefs plus 1.5. Just saying. So there's no we there.
What's the bet?
I don't know.
Straight up. Actually, fine. I'll give you 1.5. You can have it.
There we go. So what? So if I win, what should happen? And if you win, what should happen?
Let's think about it.
We might have to.
We have today and tomorrow to think about it. Getting to the NBA. Has anything crazy happened in the last 10 minutes? Let me see. Gary Payton was just traded by the Blazers to the Warriors, who have already shipped off James Wiseman today to bring in Sadiq Bey. Like that move a lot. I see the Spurs getting worse. They're one of the 4 terrible teams along with Charlotte that's in the league. Jakob Poeltl has been out. You know, Jakob Poeltl traded away from San Antonio. Yeah, the big one, obviously, was Kevin Durant last night. Hey, the Hornets did something. They traded Mason Plumlee to the Clippers. There you go.
About time. What they did earlier didn't do anything.
Youth movement. Let's get more minutes for Mark Williams, more minutes for Kai Jones. The Hornets, Uy vey, doesn't look like. We'll see what happens over the next 37 minutes, but I don't feel optimistic they're going to be able to move Terry Rozier. I thought Kelly Oubre would be easy to move, but he still hasn't come back from injury, which is just a tough break, literally and figuratively here. And Mason Plumlee, as I mentioned yesterday, that just seems so easy. Somebody's going to try to add him, and you got these young players that you want to play. It's not realistic to expect them to get rid of Gordon Hayward. So those are the two guys to watch over the next half hour. We'll keep a close eye on Rozier and on Kelly Oubre. Those are some players that Charlotte could potentially move. I did not understand at all them sending Jaden McDaniels to the Sixers today. They were part of a 3-team trade. They got a couple of second-round picks back. Who cares about a second-round pick? A second-round pick is the equivalent of change in 2023. Like, why are you giving me change? This is just more of a headache than it is something that's helping my situation right now. I know I'm supposed to think there's value to these two quarters, but I'm sorry, I don't know what I'm going to do with these two quarters. I don't know what I'm going to do with these two second-round draft picks that you're adding, but I thought Jaden McDaniels was a guy who potentially could be in your rotation, and he's going to be in Philly's rotation. I can already see how we hate that trade immediately, as soon as it happens. Hating that trade. That doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Your attention, please. It's showtime.
This is The Drive with Josh Graham.
A lot of talk about the greatest of all time in the last few weeks. Jordan Day late last week. LeBron breaking Kareem's record, Tom Brady retiring, and this story from Mike DeCourcy in the Sporting News today I found interesting. I did not know that Tom Brady had never been to five straight conference championship games like Patrick Mahomes has. And Pat Mahomes will be playing in his first, his third Super Bowl on Sunday. 1-1 in his first two, Super Bowl 57. You could listen to right here on WSJS as Mike DeCourcy joins the show now. And Mike, generally, I don't get into the greatest of all time discussion that often. It's something that, you know, just seems like low fruit to pick. But given how often that's been brought up in the last few weeks, where do you stand when it comes to the greatest ever in football and in basketball?
Well, I don't think there's any question at this point with what Brady's accomplished that he is the greatest NFL player ever. And it would take an enormous effort from Patrick Mahomes to match him or exceed him. And one of the interesting things about the article, I talked to different people. I talked to former Steeler Ramon Foster, who's now a talk host in Nashville. And I spoke with Solomon Wilcott, who played for several teams in the NFL in the late 80s, early 90s, and has been an analyst for CBS and now is with SiriusXM. And so I talked to multiple people about basically what would it take. And I posited that if he wins the Super Bowl, they win. I shouldn't say Mahomes, but if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl on Sunday, then one could argue that his first five seasons as a starter would be superior to Brady's. Brady would have an edge in having won three Super Bowls to two. But then there are the five conference championship games you mentioned. There's greater statistical performance in all categories, yards, touchdowns, as well as rushing. Brady's is already about 1/8 of what Mahomes has done with his legs. That's 23 years of Tom Brady and 5 years of Patrick Mahomes. And Mahomes is about 8 times ahead now. So extrapolate that out. So the idea is that if he can continue to play at this level for another dozen years, even if he doesn't get to seven Super Bowls, if he gets close, if he doesn't break Brady's yardage record but breaks his touchdown record, I think at that point we might start having a debate. So it's a long way away. But I think the interesting thing about the article is it points out how if he can do that and then what obstacles he has to navigate to do it for another dozen years. Family, changes in the Chiefs organization, what impact the changing salary scale might have, all kind, and injury, all those things might impact his desire to stick it out that long or longer and go ahead and get to 20 years or 22 or whatever. I think if you see him play a 22nd season, he will have passed Tom Brady by that point. I don't have much doubt.
You're right, I think, as well, to welcome the possibilities of these things because relating it to basketball, when LeBron broke Kareem's record, the reaction from many who had been in the media for 30, 40 years was, that's a record in 84 that I thought would never be broken. And here it is that it was broken in 2023. And when you consider just looking at it through the five-year snippet of Brady's first 5 years, which, of course, he didn't start his first season in 2000 and didn't make the playoffs the year after his first Super Bowl in 2001 versus what Mahomes has done, I do think it's fair to bring that stuff up. What amazes you on the basketball end of the ledger about LeBron's career? Because to parse it, I think you can say that Joe Montana was better in the postseason than Tom in terms of when he made it, how often they won the Super Bowl. Tom is the greatest because of the longevity of it. You could say Michael's the greatest basketball player ever, but you could make the argument that LeBron, if you're parsing it, has had the greatest career when you factor no controversy, no significant injuries, nothing really getting in the way of basketball. What is most impressive to you on a week that a lot of people are reflecting about the last 21 years?
What's most impressive to me is the commitment to Michael's legend that his greatest supporters have. And no matter what they see, I mean, let's be honest, no matter what they see, I mean, LeBron could play the entire game 6 feet elevated over the court and it'll never change their opinions. That's the reality. And so that's what impresses me the most about what LeBron has achieved. I think what has impressed me the most is that I saw him as a high school, rising high school junior, was one of the first people to write about him nationally, said that I compared it to, I was born too young to have seen the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. Maybe I was in the room, but I didn't get it, right? I wasn't old enough to understand. And I grew up around older people who, like, that changed the world, them on the Beatles. And when I saw LeBron at the ABCD camp in the summer of 2001, I think it was, summer of 2001, I wrote that it was like, to me, it was like seeing the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. It was because I knew that I had seen something different. This was the greatest basketball prospect in the history of the game. And that he has lived up to that, maybe exceeded it, is what's astonishing.
On Twitter at TSN Mike, read his stuff again when talking about Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady ahead of the Super Bowl this weekend. I also was reminded, you talk about his high school days. Last week, I think, was the 20-year anniversary of LeBron playing in the Greensboro Coliseum, which at that time was the biggest crowd he had ever played in front of, against Reynolds High. And I remember having Rayshon Terry in here, who played for the Tar Heels back when on that 05 title team. And he was just telling me about the buzz that was in the building and how you could just see it with LeBron at the time. Let's get to movies real quick. The Oscars noms have come out the last couple weeks. Have you watched any of the movies nominated and felt, wow, that stands out, that's spectacular?
To me, I think the movie that stands out the most is Everything Everywhere All at Once. I couldn't get my wife to see it, so it took me until, it's like she was at a convention or something, and I had a little bit of time, and I took the 2.5 hours or whatever. And I think I realized it about, I don't know, maybe half hour in, 20 minutes in, that you basically, when you go to that movie, you just have to let it be. You can't pick it. You can't pick at it. You can't say, what if? No, whatever it wants to do, you have to let it do it and add it all up at the end. And I think when I got to the end, I felt like it was among the most inventive and original movies I'd ever seen. I thought it worked on just about every level that it wanted to. There were some things that maybe it could have done without because they kind of were really, they almost felt like inside jokes. But in the end, I admired the audacity of the idea. And I think there were some really very, I've seen eight of the nine, or is it nine, or nine of the 10 or eight of the nine. I've only seen, the only one I have to see is Avatar. There was one movie on the list called Triangle of Sadness that is the single worst movie I've ever seen that's been nominated for an Oscar.
Elvis is up there too, be honest.
What's that?
Elvis is up there too, right?
Elvis is a mediocrity. It was, yeah. You know, there were good things in it, bad things. It's not something that you get done with and say, oh, why? I want my 2 hours back.
I think only reason you could be mad at it is that it's nominated for Best Picture, which isn't the movie's fault, but that, you know, it's a fun movie, but just recognize it for what it is.
Yeah. It didn't belong in the list with the others, but Triangle of Sadness doesn't belong in a list of anything admirable. It was such an amateur hack job. It, you know, a junior high could have thought of the, you know, if you're going to do a satire, the first thing you have to do is you have to make the characters interesting. And everybody is as dull as my desk. There's nobody interesting in the movie at all. So that's where it starts. And then you add in how gross it is, how needlessly gross it is. And like I said, an eighth grader could have thought up the middle scenes of the movie. There are a few good lines in it that gave you some hope early. But by the end, it was an absolute disaster. I didn't think I'd ever see a movie worse than The Joker or Joker that was nominated for Best Picture. But by the end of it, I was justifying Joker's nomination in retrospect to this, saying, well, at least you understood why it existed.
Yeah.
This one, No.
Yeah. On the way out, by the way, been watching a lot of sports movies of late. Really excited. It feels like Ben Affleck read my diary, snuck into my house and saw, we're going to do a movie on Nike. Phil Knight trying to land Michael Jordan, and that's going to come out in April. Matt Damon and Ben Affleck in a movie together with Phil Knight being played by Ben Affleck. I watched Warrior. That's a movie you need to check out. It's fantastic that I didn't know about until like the last, few months. That might be one of the best sports movies of the last 20 years. The Way Back's good. Been thinking about basketball movies. Will, our producer, hasn't seen any of the best movies at all. We made him watch Ghost last night for the first time because he didn't know who Patrick Swayze was. He watched Roadhouse as a double feature. He's going to tell us about those movies next hour. But we went through all the best basketball movies. Hoosiers he hasn't seen. Blue Chips he hasn't seen. White Men Can't Jump he hasn't seen. What's your favorite basketball movie that you might recommend?
Well, the first thing I'll say is that before he gets, spoiled, let's say, by the revised White Men Can't Jump, you got to see the original.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Thirty years ago.
But make sure he does it before that one gets onto the screen. He's got, before he turns on that one. And I'm not, and I don't know, maybe it's a good remake, but it isn't Ron Shelton.
I didn't even know they made a remake. Didn't know that.
Yeah, they did the Jack Harlow, the rapper.
Oh, no.
Is in it.
No, yes. No. We're talking Woody. We're talking Wesley Snipes, even though Wesley Snipes can't play basketball pretty clearly.
So, I will also say that don't let him watch Blue Chips because then he'll never want to watch another basketball movie because it's so bad. Okay.
Okay. So your choice.
Wherein Ron Shelton's great screenplay was ruined by those who made it.
All right.
So I'm trying to think of, One-on-One. That's the basketball movie that I would recommend.
Okay. That's a really
good
one.
Have you ever seen that?
No.
Okay, Robbie Benson.
I've heard of it. Again, I didn't see Love and Basketball until a few months ago.
I'll admit, I have not seen Love and Basketball.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I watched that recently. One-on-One's another one. Robbie Benson, I see it now. Arnett O'Toole.
Yes.
Okay.
Arnett O'Toole, who's now on Virgin River on Netflix many years later. But it's a terrific movie that tells you that, like, the name, image, and likeness world did not start in... in 2010, it didn't start in 2000, it didn't start in 1980s, it started all the way back to when Robbie Benson was being recruited to see if he's going to go to Western University or not.
It's good to see you, Mike DeCourcy. Let's do this again sometime before the tournament starts. Thanks for making the time for us as always.
You bet, Josh. Take care.
You're on the drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
It's time for At the Movies. WD watched Ghost for the first time last night and Roadhouse in a double feature. He started this week not knowing who Patrick Swayze was. Now he knows and has watched a few of his movies. When I hear that song, you think of the pottery scene, which is one of the more iconic scenes ever. And I'd venture to say, and this is a very specific category, it's the most iconic love scene without love making in the scene, right?
It's true.
It's a sex scene without sex in the scene. That's what it is.
Can't say the same for Roadhouse.
Like, there's innuendo in there pretty clearly what's happening in the pottery making scene. I don't even think it's innuendo at all what's going on there. Roadhouse lacks all innuendo and all subtlety. So WD's gonna review both those movies. I'm trying to think, are there other scenes that would even qualify? Maybe Halle Berry in the first Pierce Brosnan, James Bond, walking onto the beach from the water in the bikini. That's a memorable scene. Some would say it's sexy, but there's no lovemaking in the scene itself. Ghost, that it is one of the more iconic scenes in the history of movies. That movie's 34, make it 33 years old now. Now let's get into At the Movies.
Unless you're talking about Star Wars.
Obi-Wan has taught you well.
Movies aren't exactly Will's thing.
I don't get it.
You uncultured swine!
But that's about to change because Josh can't stand it anymore. This is At the Movies with Will Dalton.
Okay, usually I ask you what movie or what did you like the most about a movie, but since you watched both, I'll ask you a different question.
Okay.
What movie did you like more and why?
I liked Roadhouse more because it's edgy.
It's because you're a guy.
Because I'm a guy and it's edgy. And because the main character's name is Dalton.
There it is.
And he has great hair.
Those are pretty shallow reasons to like the movie.
No, they're my reasons. What was the character's... The actor who played the older guy who also had the long hair. He's in all the Western movies.
Sam Elliott.
Great hair, too. His might have been better than Patrick Swayze in that movie.
You got too much brains to have a butt like that.
That's right. Yeah. Edgy. And it's just fun. Yes. Was it stupid? Yes.
Dumb movie.
But
movie.
I like dumb movies. That's might, what I learned.
Might say something about you.
Ghost is a little too serious for me.
I'll defend Ghost. I didn't realize it was the number one movie of 1990 until doing a quick Google search today.
I didn't either.
It grossed more than Home Alone, Pretty Woman, Christmas Vacation, Goodfellas, all movies that came out in 1990. Have you seen any of those movies?
No.
The answer is yes. You watched Goodfellas a month ago. Pay attention. They just don't make movies like Ghost anymore. That's what makes the nostalgia of it hit me, where they should make movies like this, because think about this movie has something for everybody. It has an attractive male lead who might be one of the more attractive male leads for women in the history of movies when you couple that with Dirty Dancing and some of the others. You've got a love story. You've got action, you've got a drama, you've got a who did it in this movie. There aren't many movies that bring all of that to the table, and this movie did. What didn't you like about Ghost?
A couple things. Demi Moore's character didn't do it for me.
What?
I didn't find her all that attractive.
What?
It was the haircut. The haircut.
See, the haircut. It. I forgot about the haircut until I rewatched it. And Sarah Bradford asked me, she hadn't seen this movie before, Josh, what do you think about the haircut? And my immediate reaction was, doesn't really age well, because no. You don't really see people wearing their hair like that 30 years later. But Demi Moore's always attractive. How dare you? And I want that stricken from the record, number one.
Sorry.
Number two, you got to realize this. The haircut's iconic. You can't separate it. Like, Ghost is iconic as a movie. The haircut is iconic. It might be one of the more iconic 90s hairdos, along with the Rachel, Jennifer Aniston, and Friends.
That one, yeah.
Yeah. This, a lot of people wore their hair high and tight, short, like Demi Moore did because of Demi Moore in Ghost in 1990. So for that reason, not going to fault it too much. In terms of her performance, though, and her character, I've never seen an actress before or after that can just cry the way that she cries in movies. And if you're not moved at the end when both her eyes are leaking tears, and according to the research, she can just cry on command.
It's impressive.
It's magical. She blew Patrick Swayze off of the screen. In fact, I thought Swayze was the weak link of this movie. Whoopi Goldberg won an Oscar for it, changed the movie about halfway through it, adding a little bit of comedy and a little bit of Whoopi to it.
Also, just the tone of listen, it was a good movie. I'm not saying I didn't like the movie. I just liked Roadhouse better. But just the tone of it, I'm not big into sad movies. And there was just, it's kind of a sad tone movie.
What's the best quote that you've got from Roadhouse? Because I will give you
one I can't say on air, but I'll try.
Ghost. Not strong. It's not its strong suit, bringing a lot of great quotes.
Oh, I have one from Ghost, too.
What do you got?
Yeah. Do you have some Pepto-Bismol? How about some cyanide? Now, do you believe in ghosts?
Mm, yeah, there are not a lot of great quotes from that movie.
So, from Roadhouse, if somebody gets in your face and calls you a bleep sucker, I want you to be nice.
Yeah, I want you to be nice until...
Yeah.
Pain Don't Hurt's good.
The name's Dalton. He's real good.
What am I supposed to do? There's always Barber College. It's an excellent line from that same scene. Rotten Tomatoes. Both movies. Audience scores. Let's start with Roadhouse. Or let's start with Ghost.
92.
86.
Yeesh, not as high as I would have thought. Clearly.
Roadhouse.
80.
66.
Oh, man!
Just speaking to my point. And that's been At the Movies. Again, I'm fine with Roadhouse.
Me too.
So you and I, inverse on this. I love Ghost, think it's a great movie. I'm fine with Roadhouse. I'm fine with it.
I'm fine with Ghost.
I know, but you seem to love Roadhouse.
Yeah.
That's been At the Movies. We need to figure out what movie we're going to make you watch. In the spirit of this trailer that dropped for the Phil Knight, Sonny Vaccaro, Nike movie trying to convince Michael Jordan to jump on with Nike, starring Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. It's called Air. Really, probably could have come up with a better name than that, but you can find that trailer online. We want to do basketball movies, and I think... We went through the list of movies that you've seen. Very short list. Essentially, all it is Juice. It's the only... Well, that's not even much of a basketball movie, come to think. I think I got that mixed up with... What's the Tupac basketball movie? I get these movies mixed up that he was in. Titles. Have you seen Above the Rim? WD, have you seen Above the Rim with Tupac? I got that mixed up with Juice. Juice isn't a basketball movie. Above the Rim is.
Maybe Above the Rim is what I've seen then.
Okay.
Because I think I also got the two confused.
That happens. I think we're down to White Men Can't Jump or Hoosiers. Since DeCourcy said that Blue Chips is a terrible movie.
I disagree
with them on that, but I would say the other two movies are better.
See, we did have somebody call in and recommend Space Jam, but we did that one a while back.
You've already seen Space Jam.
And apparently Space Jam 2 is out of the question, even though, you know.
The point is to watch classics. Even if you love the movie, it came out last year. I'm not going to make you watch movies for this segment that came out last year.
So what? It can't be a...
It defeats the purpose of what we're trying to do. The point is... It's ridiculous you haven't seen these movies. It's not ridiculous if you haven't seen a movie that came out last year. That's not ridiculous.
Hmm.
That's the point.
I see. It's The Drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
We do have one more pair of tickets to give away for Disturbed. I think you'll know the cue to call in later on this hour to win those. Here's a hint. It's not all that subtle. David Glenn joins us, which might explain why Margaritaville's playing right now in the month of February. It does make sense that we're chatting with DG, given he's somebody we rely on for reason, which is why... He did such a nice job all those years with the ACC Sports Journal, accsports.com, and as a North Carolina sports radio legend. Not a lot of reason coming from Tar Heel fans the last few days since they lost in Winston-Salem, and certainly with the losses before that to Pitt at home and in Durham last Saturday. You have a story up talking about their chances being on the NCAA bubble, if they were to get in, that you can find at chapelboro.com. I don't want to spoil any of that. Encourage people, if you want to read about the chances the Tar Heels have of making the tournament, you can find that at Chapelboro. Instead, I want to know who's most responsible right now, you think, for where the Tar Heels currently stand. How much are we responsible in terms of the expectations that were set and a lot of the shortcomings we're seeing? How do you assess it?
Well, Josh, it's great to be with you as always. Fun to add this video element so I can actually see you. Please say hello to my other good friend, Patrick Swayze, in the other room.
He watched Ghost and Roadhouse for the first time last night.
I'm proud of both of you guys for lots of reasons, but I was so happy to see that on social media. That was really cool. I'm not going to throw the media under the bus on this. When four of five starters return from the team that came within a couple possessions of becoming the second 8 seed in the history of college basketball to win the NCAA title, and some of those guys, whereas not high-ranking NBA prospects, they definitely could have turned the page and played professional basketball somewhere in the world. They chose to come back. They were not shy themselves about saying, we're running this back with the championship as the goal. So anybody who's going to – you want to give the media some tiny slice of the blame, go right ahead. The players themselves set the bar at the national championship. And when it comes to X's and O's, I think we've shared this before, Caleb Love is one of the most erratic, important Tar Heels in the history of one of the most celebrated programs in college basketball. When you play 30 to 35 minutes a game and you are a human roller coaster the way Caleb Love is, and you shoot less than 30% from three-point land, and yet you take far more threes than anybody on your team, that ain't going to work. It's just not going to work. Is the Tar Heels' ceiling still high? I think it's as high as anybody not named Virginia in the ACC. But could they also miss the NCAA tournament entirely? That is also on the table as we come down the stretch here, because the Tar Heels are that erratic overall, and one of their important guards is that erratic individually.
Caleb Love, I've made this analogy before. He is North Carolina's version of Austin Rivers. Same height, same weight, same type of player, and they're both going to be remembered for a shot that they hit in the rivalry, and it, in both cases, it might not end the way that people wanted it to end for them. Austin Rivers in Greensboro against Lehigh. And for Caleb Love, we'll see what happens. It might even be missing the NCAA tournament. It just feels like when you hear Austin Rivers' name, Duke fans still think so fondly of that one moment. And with Caleb, I bet you decades down the line, when you bring his name up, it's probably going to be something similar.
The reality of the situation is there's a chunk of fans, Josh, that will see Caleb Love's name somewhere in that top 10 to 15 on the ACC scoring list and will conclude that that makes him a really good player. Coaches never look at the world that way. Never. Fans can do whatever they want.
Or scouts, by the way. I've never had a player in my 7-8 years covering the ACC as closely as I have. I've gotten to know plenty of scouts, and there's no player I've been asked about more and had more conversations with scouts about than Caleb Love. And most of it, to your point, I think you're making, it's not positive.
Well, scouts and coaches both use the phrase high volume, low efficiency. And that's a really bad combination. If you shoot that poorly from 3-point range at some point, you should take fewer 3-point shots. Now, the reason Caleb Love is still on the NBA radar, I mean, there is a chance he will be a draft pick. I'd be shocked if it was in the first round. But when you can hit threes, and he did last year, that's part of the mystery here. How do you go from being the 36% three-point shooter, which is plenty good enough, to being the 28 or 29% three-point shooter, which is definitely not good enough if you're going to take as many as he takes? How does that happen? Well, he is also a guy who has some size at guard, some experience at point guard, although he often plays on the wing, long arms, the ability to be a good one-on-one defender. But Josh, one of my recent columns, they call it Holding Court at chapelborough.com, gave numbers on the efficiency of the Tar Heels when a certain player leaves the court and then comes back in. So they just crunch the numbers when Caleb Love is out there, crunch the numbers when he's not out there. The bottom line is the Heels improve offensively when Caleb is out there, but they get so much worse defensively. The numbers would knock you over. The Tar Heels become a bad team on the defensive end, in part because Caleb Love is out there. This is not my opinion. This is the cold, hard numbers, simply comparing how well they defend when he is out there, how well they defend when he's not out there. They're pretty good defensively when he's not out there. They're not good defensively when he is out there. He needs to own that, especially for somebody who, remember, as a freshman, had his dad talking in the public forum about how Roy Williams wasn't giving his son enough respect. You know, Roy Williams retired in part because he said he couldn't reach all the young players on his roster anymore. That's Roy Williams talking, among other interviews, with me. And it doesn't take a genius to know that Caleb Love, then a freshman in Roy Williams' last year, was one of the guys Roy felt like he couldn't reach. Well, guess what? Somehow Hubert Davis mostly reached Caleb Love last year. That connection is not clicking this year for whatever reason. And it's Hubert Davis's job to get that player back on track. But it's Caleb Love's job to get his head back in the game. His body language has been horrible. His defense has been horrible. And you got to meet your coach halfway when it comes to your effort, your attitude, your body language. Armando Bacot didn't name names entirely, but he's talking in part about Caleb Love, and there's no doubt about it.
That's your cue, I think, WD.
Yeah. Armando.
still a thing. Forgetting. That was
I
really
forgot about that. Yeah. I didn't know you guys kept that version because he said he liked other.
He
other
did.
Audio
he did product. Like the other better. He still hasn't delivered in sending us a new version. He did off. He did offer to pay me NIL money in order to scrub it completely. And I probably should have asked him to name a number. But anyway, that actually leads me where I want to go next. David Glenn joins us here. In the last 7 days, well, Wake Forest has been involved in the NIL conversation. In a bad way, when Jim Boeheim, when Wake Forest is catching strays from Jim Boeheim, and it's inadvertent, I think, given the apology that Boeheim gave after the fact and how he walked it back when it came to Pitt and Wake, but did not do so for Miami, which I think was the primary target of what he was talking about. And it's fair to look at those criticisms and say, though that's the negative end of NIL, where it's not really name, image, and likeness we're talking about. It's pay-for-play guised as that, trying to find a loophole in order to pay players to come to your school. There's that piece. And then there's today, Ty Appleby, who right now leads the ACC in scoring and leads the ACC in assists. Back in October, he told us that he reached out to Appleby's corporate in order to get an NIL sponsorship and said he hadn't heard back. Well, he has heard back today.
Nice.
As now there's a full-fledged commercial that's on my social media. Appleby's corporate sent it to me today to put out there. And I heard they're also going to be sending us T-shirts, too, that say Appleby's with a Y at the end rather with the E-E. And Ty Appleby is now a spokesman for Appleby's, which
that makes me so happy.
It's fantastic.
He's fun to watch. He's a great story. He's a tribute to Steve Forbes and what he has done, you know, multiple years now with high-end transfers. He was not an elite player for the Florida Gators.
No.
He was a nice player for the Florida
Gators.
And Alondis
Williams wasn't that way at Oklahoma either.
Exactly.
Turned him in, and he's a great coach. But I'm using all this to make the point that is the good of what NIL brings.
Sure.
A lot of people want to focus on the negative. Hey, you want to talk about the negatives with officiating? I love what Roger Goodell said yesterday when talking about officials are more accurate than they've been before in the replay era, but outrage is kind of at an all-time high when people can nitpick you on social media the way that people do. Focusing with the NIL issue, do the pros outweigh the cons welcoming Wake Forest's inclusion into this topic the last week?
To me, the pros outweigh the cons. I understand why people don't like it. Coaches off the record will tell you how much they dislike the transfer portal and name, image, likeness. On the record, they typically have to say nice things because they don't want to hurt their recruiting efforts. No recruit wants to hear their potential coach say they hate NIL and they hate the transfer portal, right? No transfer wants to hear that. So the coaches have to be careful with their public comments, but they mostly dislike it. I'm pro freedom. And one thing I would point out to your listeners across North Carolina is, you know, nobody likes a complainer, but the worst type of complainer complains at both ends of the spectrum. And here's what I mean. You and I have been around long enough to have heard how they like college basketball less, wait for it, because guys don't hang around as long, right? Even the guys who aren't going to be drafted, even the guys who aren't going to make the NBA, they're leaving early. Well, guess what? Isaiah Wong stayed at Miami in large part because of name, image, likeness money. You got to see him grow up as a Hurricane, right? You got to see him as a freshman and as a sophomore and as an upperclassman. So there is that's one of the upsides of name, image, likeness.
You know who else stuck around? Armando Bacot did, I
Armando.
Bet you.
Right. You get to see him as a senior. You get to see him set the double-doubles record in the history of the program. You get to see Tyler Hansbrough shake his hand and give him a hug when he breaks the rebounding record. None of that would have happened without name, image, likeness, right? So, of course, there's an upside. Very few things in life are 100% good or 100% bad. Somebody asked me earlier today on another show about Jim Boeheim and his bullying of student reporters recently and his nonsensical shots, and that's what they were, lazy, ignorant, cheap shots at Wake Forest and Pitt when they didn't belong in that conversation. And I said, I've known Jim for a long time. He is a 90% reasonable, good guy. You'd like what he does with charitable efforts. You'd like how he treats most of his current and former players. If you met him face-to-face, you'd probably enjoy your time with him. 10% of the time, and I've bumped heads with Jim Boeheim enough times to know this, there's that 10% of him where he's an unreasonable, miserable jerk.
Like the Greensboro comment. And you want to talk about speaking both sides of your mouth. The crux of the Greensboro argument was, I think he even said verbatim, if it's a business, let's treat it like a business. Oh, well, Jim, if it's a business with NIL, let's treat it like a business. Talking a little bit.
There's audio out there, Josh, where Jim Boeheim wanted to take me on live radio about the details of the Carolina case with the academic misconduct. And you know me, man, I respect these coaches, but when they go beyond their expertise, I said to him on live radio, Coach, with all due respect, I have forgotten more about how those NCAA rules work than you will ever know. So please don't misinform my audience by saying nonsensical things about why you're mad about how the UNC case turned out. And if I was in the room when he was bullying those student reporters, I would have stood up for those student reporters the way you've seen me do in other contexts. You know, not everybody's all good or all bad. And name, image, likeness is not all good or bad, all bad either. And it's just my opinion. This is probably a minority opinion, but I think the good outweighs the bad.
David Glenn's with us here. Last thing for you. Since the Eagles are in the Super Bowl and the only time they've won the Super Bowl, you were in the building for it. Yeah. I take it you're not going this time around. How does that affect your confidence level of the Eagles on Sunday?
I don't weigh my presence at all. I don't believe in that good luck charm type stuff. I am disappointed, Josh, because just as you and Will have a special place in my life, I was at that Eagles game 5 years ago with literally my two oldest friends in the world since 10 years old. So we went out there to Minneapolis and saw the Eagles beat Brady and the Patriots. Unfortunately, they're in Arizona right now.
Oh.
So there's a long story why I couldn't go. I've got some things cooking that I'll tell you about another time, but it just, the timing couldn't be worse. But the Glens are hosting a Super Bowl party. You will be asked at the door if you'll be rooting for the Eagles, though.
So. I'm having a Super Bowl party, too. Sarah Bradford and I hosting the Super Bowl party.
You guys probably will take everybody from either side of the fence. We are taking only Eagles fans at our party.
Yeah, I could see that. That's fantastic. We'll see. Do you have a lean on the game?
I do like the Eagles. I think they're the better team, slightly. Patrick Mahomes and that ankle and how well he gets away from maybe the best pass rush in the NFL. If I had to circle a key, that's going to be it.
And if you wonder what that looks like, 2 years ago, we just watched a Super Bowl where Mahomes was running for his life. It can happen.
Right. And if it goes that way, the Eagles are definitely going to win. If he becomes, you know, if he just becomes that escape artist and makes those those scramble plays that actually have hurt the Eagles defense at times this year, one of their only vulnerabilities. That's Andy Reid's and the Chiefs' recipe for a victory. I'm fascinated because, as you know, Philly fans don't like many of their ex-coaches or ex-players. Andy Reid is the exception to that. They really still respect him. So it doesn't mean they're going to root for the Chiefs, obviously. They're still going to be screaming and booing. But it would be awesome, after listening to my ancestors complain about how the Eagles had never won a Super Bowl. And that was true, of course. It would be awesome to see them win two. And what would that be? Two of the last six, I guess?
Two of the last 6 years, and you're doing it with two different head coaches and two different starting quarterbacks, which should be evidence of how quickly you can rebuild things if, say, you're a Carolina Panthers fan and you have – your head coach, who was once the play caller for that Super Bowl winning team in 2017. DG, it's good to see you, and I hope to see you sometime soon. Thanks for doing this.
Love it, man. It's always great to see you and chat with you and your audience. Appreciate you having me. Keep up the good work.